oversaturated, overset, oversaturated, overset, oversaturated,
podcast,
overset, oversaturated, overset, oversaturated, overset, oversaturated, overset,
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 overset.
Welcome to another episode of Oversaturated, the podcast, where we discuss music, movies, pop culture, and everything in between. I'm Johnny.
And I'm Ralph.
Welcome to episode number 79.
69, 69.
I applaud you, my brother.
That was beautiful. That was it.
Yeah, look at that. All new listeners, please follow us on all social media, Facebook. Just search Oversaturated the Podcast. Twitter is Oversat Podcast. Instagram is Oversat the Podcast. And our email is oversatpodcast@gmail.com. And check out our website, oversatthepod.com. Anything you need to know about OS is there, including previous episodes.
Yes, sir. And if you want to follow us individually, I am The Mind of Raph on Instagram and Twitter.
Twitter, I'm J-O-N, 2 underscores, the letter B. Instagram, I'm JBS underscore ESL underscore AAMU. Ralph, before we get into the shits, let's introduce our guest. We do have a guest for part one of Breaking the Wire. That's why we are here today. This young lady, this dynamic, this awesome young lady is a recurring guest on Oversaturated.
Yes.
The most notable episode she was on was Colonizer Appreciation Music right after Black Panther came out. This lady, she does everything. She's a DJ, she's a curator, she's a creator. She's just an amazing individual. She's an alum of the Alabama A&M University. She created, I'm gonna call it an organization called Black Cinema Club, where she gets individuals together to view movies and then they review them. They have discussions on them. She hosts Insecure. It's called Issa Chat. Dope. I participated in that, which is amazing. So many names today. Her name is Victoria, but I call her Vicky. Me and Ralph, I'm gonna call her Vicky. I don't know what Ralph gonna call her.
Vicky
is here. Vicky, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I hope I did your intro justice.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of things that I do, and you summed it right up.
Thanks.
yeah, he hit all the check marks on that, but that's what's up. But usually I start off with asking Johnny how he's doing. You know, it's been about a week since two weeks since we recorded.
No, didn't we record last week?
No, we dropped last week.
Oh, we dropped last week.
Anyway. Nonetheless, I would like to pose that question to our guest, Vicky. You know, we like to ask people how they're doing, especially in this quarantine / I don't want to say race riot, but, you know.
This unrest.
Right, the end of days. That's what I'm liking to call it.
I try not to consider it the end of days, but damn it. It's apocalyptic. I would say that. No, I'm okay. I'm handling everything. I'm maintaining every day, you know, kind of taking things as they come. And honestly, I think I'm getting better at it every day. So I'm cool. Yeah.
It's good to hear.
Why yes. don't?
I'm good. I'm just keeping myself busy. As the listeners know, I've had some not okay days, and I've had some great days. I'm like in between right now. It's up and down. Each day is different.
I think that's for everybody, to be honest. Like in between, it is because there is no certainty. This like, all right, we're here.
Right. Like, damn, what's next?
Yeah, I'm somewhere between like okay and like I want to go outside and act like everything's normal. But it's not. It's really not. But you know, salute to those, you know, that's out there doing their thing. Like I'm past knocking people. You know, live your life. I just don't want to be a part of it. Like I just want to make sure everything's straight until I'm outside. I'm tired of worrying about, you know, you know, anybody else.
Exactly.
So that's how I feel about that. But, you know, before we kind of get to the concept of today's podcast, we got to say rest in peace, Huey, man. Like, that was really shocking. Like, that whole thing.
So unexpected. I woke up to that news and, of course, it was unexpected and I was shocked. Then I guess it hit harder for me because I found out that Saturday he was supposed to have a video shoot. So it's like he had, you know, this event set up, you know, a lot of people supposed to be involved. It's like now it's just, you know, it's all gone now because this one individual was taken way too soon. And I didn't even realize he was my age. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. It shows you how young he was when he, you know, he hit his pinnacle. And I thought, you know, that was kind of, you know, I guess a little shocking to me. I was like, damn, he was only 32. But, you know, best, you know, oh, what'd you say, Jason?
31. He had just turned.
Oh, he's 31.
Oh. So, yeah. So, technically, he's younger than us.
Right. Yeah. It's.
Oh.
But with that, it's like, no matter, like, we're still young.
Yeah.
Facts.
And, like, that just, you know, and I don't know the root of, you know, why he was murdered, but it was just like the fact that he was murdered was enough.
Yeah.
And, like, and this is why I was like, I'm maintaining earlier. In the week, like, he passed on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
In the week, a classmate of mine got killed.
Oh, wow.
So, like, I started and ended my week on this tip of these people being murdered in St. Louis. And, like, yeah. You know, in their, basically in what they would consider in, like, a space that should be home for them.
Yeah.
So, it's like, there's this, we got a lot of work to do as a city. And I'm not gonna go down that rabbit hole.
Oh, we can get into that.
Yeah, that's a whole other
conversation. I get it, but it just feels like it's deflecting a little bit from our over, you know, what we're trying to get accomplished right now. But
yeah,
exactly.
And that's why we're here, because we want to try to provide some type of escape. Release or relief or escape for people. Mm-hmm. You know, like, mm-hmm. Of course we're all going through some shit, so. Tune in to Oversaturated because we're here for you. We want to make sure that you guys are okay. So,
yeah. But no. Right. But now let's get into this concept that, you know, me and Johnny cooked up. Now, the thing is, like, this war has been started over, like, less. Like, people really go to, like, a real fisticuffs, if I would say, when it comes to these two shows. And we're talking about Breaking Bad and The Wire. This is something that, you know, it kind of got cooked up because of the quarantine. Like, we have nothing but time, so we can kind of revisit these shows and kind of get into the nuance that is these shows. So it's kind of like, why do people herald these as some of the greatest TV dramas of all time? And I just thought that this would be a great conversation. And I didn't really grow up on these shows. I mean, I didn't have, like, a attachment to them when they were out. So all my ideas and all my, like, viewpoints on this are all fresh. Like, these are 2020 Ralph looking at all this stuff here, rather than, you know, when these shows were actually aired in real time. Mm-hmm. And I thought this would be a great concept that me and Johnny can gotta get into, but I know that I might have bias and Johnny may have bias, so we have to have someone to balance out what we're bringing to the table, and no other than the beautiful, intelligent, our friend, Vicky, to just kind of balance out what we got going here. So I don't know if you guys had, like, any, like, takes on what you thought that these shows would have been before you kind of hit play and we got into it. Like, anybody?
I honestly didn't. Both shows were highly recommended by a friend, and he, like, these are actually, I wish he could be on the show, but he has, like, these are probably, like, his top two shows. Like, if mm-hmm. you ever reference, like, what's your favorite shows of all time, it's, like, these two.
Yeah.
Wire. And I get it. Honestly. Because, like, looking at both of them, it's not just even about, like, the storyline. It's, like, the writing for both of these shows were amazing.
Mm-hmm.
In the time that they were written, especially The Wire, which was early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, who would have thought?
Yeah.
Like this, or even, like, thought that this could be portrayed on television. But yeah, so I didn't come in with, like, any bias per se, but I definitely had an expectation of, like,
yes.
gonna be great. Yeah. Because everybody hyping him up, and this Negro hyping it up real big. So it's like, I trust his view, but it's like,
yeah.
I need to, like, you know, watch it myself. So
that's funny. So I do have a slight bias, and I'll let the listeners see if they can guess as we discuss these seasons. But this is my first time going through The Wire. Mm-hmm. So these are 2020 Johnny's thoughts as well. Like I didn't watch this in 2002. I was preteen, teenager. I didn't care about this. Breaking Bad started in 2008, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And I think I caught on around season three. So I binged 1 through 3, like I found them shits online somewhere. And then when season 4 started out, I watched it regularly. So and rewatching it again has, you know, brought all of those memories back up. So it's gonna be really, really interesting for us to all three of us to discuss this. I'm excited for it.
Oh yeah, yeah. Let's just jump straight into it. Breaking Bad season 1. Do you guys even have any like thoughts about the pilot episode before we kind of just get all the way into the season? Like if you can remember anything about it?
I thought it was kind of slow. it started off kind of slow, and then it like got progressively like really good. Like, yeah. So it didn't like grasp me in the first, like, let's say 10 minutes. And then after that, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like it, but overall, like, and I want to compare them right now, but I'm trying to.
We'll get to it, Vicky. Like, we got all day, baby.
That was the first thing that stood out to me, was like those pilot episodes. But with Breaking Bad, I thought it was, again, very well written. And yeah, it really did like show you, like, It really gave you like kind of like the villain story, like the background of like why this person became the person that you eventually know them to become.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, okay, so yeah, I can root for this motherfucker. Like, I can root for him like throughout this entire season, even though like I may disagree with what he's doing. Like, I can root. So yeah, that was my initial like take on specifically the pilot.
Yeah, I think it was. Like, I rewatched it actually today, so I kind of have a fresh POV on it. I thought they kind of got straight to it. Like, even though the series does start off slow, and I do agree with you there, I think they cook the first episode. They catch bodies the first episode. I was like, wow. But, you know, just kind of grasping everything that's going on, because the way The Breaking Bad is at least shot and the way that it's written, you know, they put scenes before they actually happen, so you kind of have to go back to see what happened. So the first scene is Walter White driving the RV under duress and whatever is going on. And then he thinks he's about to be arrested. And then we jump back into the timeline, what, maybe 2 weeks later or something. I mean, 2 weeks before.
Really? Yeah.
So I think that was interesting. But just in the first episode, I think they laid a good groundwork of what you kind of see throughout the whole entire series, actually. Mm-hmm. He disrespects Jesse at every given turn. So I just have to throw that out there. I hate that.
Jesse was getting on my nerves. Like, dude, he is not, like, Jesse just doesn't, he's not smart.
Yes.
No, he just, he works under an illusion of what he believes he's supposed to be as a drug dealer, basically. Doesn't act in the way of like a smart person should as a drug dealer. He's like functioning as a character, and you realize that later on in the series or in the season, actually, like why that is. So it makes sense. But yeah, Jesse was getting on my nerves, and it was like, ooh, like listen to the person who knows what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? Like, as a chemist, you're just doing this again as a drug dealer. Yeah. Shut up. Just listen. You failed the class.
No, facts. And Jesse was comfortable with how things were going. Mm-hmm. Not thinking that things could be improved.
Yeah.
Like, he was just set. He was set in his ways. Oh, mm-hmm. No, this works. I put chili powder in my when I cook. Like, that's my signature. Like, people know it's me. Mm-hmm. No, we can't do that no more. We about to run this like a legitimate business now.
Yeah.
Which is what good drug dealers do.
Yeah. But just kind of just start getting into the whole dynamic of Walter White. Like he's a, you know, middle-aged, you know, chemistry teacher who actually recently finds out that he has a, you know, a fatal diagnosis of what, lung cancer, right?
Lung cancer. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was interesting in itself because he's dealing with all these emotions. Like he's a pushover at life. Like he doesn't get respect from his students. Like he doesn't get respect from his second boss. Like he works at a car wash, you know, part-time. I don't knock that, but I can see why somebody would try to, you know, like if you're 17, you'll make fun of, you know, your teacher at a car wash. Like,
yeah. Especially if the teacher is cleaning your tires.
Yeah. Like it's like Walter White didn't own the car wash. He was scrubbing tires.
Taking cash, scrubbing tires, and was being told to scrub tires. Like, fam, yeah. I'm 50. I'm not about to get down and do no tires. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, it seemed like he was just getting pushed over by everybody, and including, like, his family. You know, I don't think he really had, like, a severe backbone. I don't think he had, really had one.
Well, like, I want to understand, and, you know, this is something hopefully we'll get into later on in the season because I'm just now really getting into the show. But why is he so kind of like, or why did he get to that point where he was kind of like spineless and just a pushover, like
he enjoyed, like, and this is the I guess the geek part of Walter White, and that's not a, you know, disrespect. I think he really just loves science. And when it gets into his backstory a little bit as to why he's living just the life that he's living, because it seems like he's so brilliant, why are you settling just for being a chemistry teacher? You know, when he actually was a head of a, you know, some type of, you know, pharmaceutical company or something like that. And he chose to walk away for, you know, reasons that we'll get into in later seasons. But they at least allude to he had, you know, obviously the life before the pilot episode, you know, as to why he's like the way he is.
Yeah. Man, good old Walter, man. What I do like about the pilot is that we do see him go from this meek old man who gets pushed over all the time to something that clicks in his mind. It's like, okay, I'm 50 now. I got lung cancer. I need to just start living. Like, I need to start living. I don't have the money to pay for my cancer treatment or whatever. I know I don't have the money, so I gotta think of how I'm gonna pay for this. And he goes on a ride along with his brother-in-law, right? Hank.
Yeah, Hank. Mm-hmm.
And sees Jesse, like, oh, like, I know this guy. Maybe I could, you know, collaborate with him and start maybe cooking. Maybe I could sell enough to do what I need to do, pay these bills, and get out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the drug dealing always starts with the most, you know, greatest of intentions, right? Mm-hmm. Because he started out like, oh, this is what I want, but the way I still go back to this, even though Jesse was a complete utter fuck up, like especially when he started out. But I think off his first interaction, he told Jesse, like, look, I didn't think you would ever really amount to anything, but look, I'm willing, I want you to come work for me. Like, what? And it's like Walt, and this is one thing that I don't like about Walt, he has delusions of grandeur. He feels that just because he cooks, he's not a drug dealer. No, once you cross that line and you started, like, I want to start cooking meth, and you killed two men just because of the gas that you blew up in the RV. No, you're a criminal too. Yeah. But he tries to disassociate himself from Jesse just because of Jesse's, you know, demeanor and how he talks, and, you know, you're a drug dealer. I'm not. No, well, no, you're in the same boat, my guy. Like, there's no separation. And that's one thing I didn't like about Walt, because he felt like, I'm just this guy, and as long as I stay here, you know, I'm okay. But you crossed that line, pal. Like, it's too late in the first episode.
Facts. I think he felt, because he was this middle-aged man that had a job and a full-time job and a part-time job, trying to take care of his family. It's like, okay, this is my life. I'm just going to do something. This is my side hustle real quick, because I'm not going to do it for long. And I think because of that, that's why he felt like, yeah, I'm not the same as Jesse. But no, as soon as you stole that equipment from the high school to cook, you crossed over. Ain't no going back. There's no going back.
He may have not started a complete descent into, you know, his alter ego, you know, Heisenberg. You know, we'll get into that. But I don't think that, you know, he fully understood the life, because throughout this season, you see things that he, like, it was certain things, and I'll get into this one particular scene. Jesse was out selling the meth, and he was only selling little dime bags or whatever you call it, but he only came back with so much money, and Walt couldn't compute why you only have this when I gave you a pound or something. Like, I need thousands. I need racks. No, my guy. Like, this is not how it works. No. So he was like, I need you to go find, like, a distributor. He's like, hey. And then Jesse was like, so, Walt, you want me to walk up on some high-level drug dealer and say, hey, Mr. Glass Guy, you want me to, you know, buy meth from me? Like, I was like, it's like, but it Walt doesn't understand the street side. And he was dumb for picking Jesse. Like, I always said he was stupid for picking Jesse from the first. Like, I was like, I'm pretty sure it was most street savvy guys out there that you could have found.
I think that was his direct link. My bad. Go ahead, Vicky.
Yeah, no, like he was about to say, I think he had that direct link with him, and he had that relationship and that history with him, where he was like, you know, if anything, I got something on you. Like, yeah. I can work because I got something on you. And I can work, and I can give you the material that you need to push this weight and, you know, bring back the money. That's it. But what he did know is that Jesse isn't the best. Like, he's not good. So, like, if he's not good at his job and Walt doesn't know, like, you know, Jesse's just, like, doing it the way he's been doing it. And that's when Walt is like, well, why the fuck we ain't make this much money? It's like, well, this isn't how the business works, first of all. And two, you got the most timid motherfucker in the street. So, like, I don't expect this man to ever, you know, walk up to, you know, eventually Tuco and be like, hey, I got all these.
Like, buy for me. Like.
Right.
And it's, yeah, like, Watt wasn't street enough, but neither is really Jesse. Yeah. But with that, like, they had to both learn in the midst of it like, how to be street savvy and how to be street smart. So, yeah, these folks.
Walt should have known Jesse wasn't the smartest. Knowing that his name was Cap'n Cook, first of all, that's a dumbass name. Second of all, Jesse's license plate said the Cap'n.
Cap'n.
Like, man, they're gonna find you. It's on your license plate.
Well, it wasn't about the business. It was more about the glamour that he expected from the business for Jesse.
Jesse. Yeah. Like, he definitely got into that life not because of, you know, humble beginning. Like, his family left him that house. I'm sorry if we spoiled that. You know, hey, whatever. You know, y'all get to that later on. But you know, you obviously see that he's coming from at least some type of, like, well off background. So this is the life that he's choosing, not rather the life that chose him. So that's why it's kind of like, it's like, you know, he'll sell meth for a few years and then he'll get his shit together. Like, it's,
it don't work like that.
Exactly, it doesn't. But one thing I will say, and Vicky, you can kill me for this, I don't like any of the women on this show.
Honestly. Okay, so what's his wife, Skylar?
Yeah, Skylar.
I don't completely hate her. I'm just like,
annoyed.
I get her like being frustrated because she's not sure what the hell is going on and she knows something's going on around her.
Yeah.
But like, just the way that she handles it, it's like, girl, I need you to stop being so fucking annoying. Like, quit being so, like, paranoid, basically. Like, if he's telling you something, then, you know, it's going to take time for him to eventually share whatever it is that you believe that he's hiding. Yes. So you push him into getting him to tell you what it is. If not, he's not going to tell you at all. So just, like, let it sit. So with that, I didn't completely hate her. I just got annoyed with her. Her sister.
Woo! From season 1 to season 5, we'll get to the arc of Marie. It never changes. Like, I think she stays the same.
Okay. Again, another moment where I was like, I'm not completely upset with this white woman, but woo, child. Now, when she stole that fucking tiara for the baby, and what's her name? Skylar tries to take it back. And she ends up basically almost getting arrested for it. And she, you know, she goes into her white woman tent.
I'm glad you said that. Skylar was good for that.
And that was the part that was like, I get why you act like this supreme white woman right now, because you're trying to get the fuck out of this situation, especially as a pregnant woman.
Mm-hmm.
You're being a real white woman right now.
Yes.
But that your sister put you in this shit, so I can't be completely mad at you for like your white womanness to get out of this situation. Now, with her sister though, why the fuck, what in your logic? What in your logic? I guess, you know, maybe it's not logic. Maybe it is just like a disease of sort. But you feel like you got to be a fucking kleptomaniac and steal everything that's like in close proximity to you so far that you will steal this expensive ass tiara and give it as a gift to your fucking niece. Are you fucking serious right now, my girl? And just like these women are enough for me. I was like, y'all. White. They were just like, honestly, they were just like the supreme version of white women.
Yes.
And that made me so frustrated with them. Both of them.
Johnny, what you got, bro?
Now, okay, I'm going to play devil's advocate for Skylar. Okay. Now, in Skylar's case, only I'm only speaking for season one. We're not thinking about no other seasons right now.
Okay, fair enough.
Her husband just found out he has cancer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So of course that would, and he just turned 50. So I assume that would mess with anybody's psyche. Like he's probably maybe going through depression, any of that type of stuff. So the fact that he's not sharing with his wife, I understand why she's frustrated. This may be the first time in their marriage that something like this has ever happened. So I can understand her reactions to that. So I'm not really upset with her for the way that she was acting toward Walt in that regard. Mm. Now her sister, I got nothing. I don't know if she like if something is like maybe she's jealous and wants attention. Maybe that's why she wants to steal these things. Like I have no clue. I don't know why she's doing this shit. But it's wild.
Valid, cause her. What was the episode where? Was it the first episode where they did the surprise party for Walt?
Yeah, that was his birthday.
Yeah, so they did the surprise birthday party, and one of the guests at the party was talking about like how flat her stomach is, Skylar. Like she was barely,
and she was pregnant. Yeah.
And then her sister was just like, "Well, I can tell."
Yep.
Why are you being so snide? Like, what's the point? What's your beef? Like, I'm your. I'm pregnant, like, you know, you shouldn't be so angry, I guess.
Yeah.
But that just showed, like, yeah, maybe she does have some, like, you know, inner self-conscious, you know, self-esteem issues, especially with her sister, where she feels like she has to do stuff to, like, get attention. But ain't her husband a DEA agent?
Like, a ranking DEA agent at that.
Risk your life, basically, and, like, your husband's probably career for some heels and a tiara and whatever else you probably just stole in between.
Exactly. It's insane. But one other moment where Skylar went full Karen on us was when she pulled up on Jesse. Like when she pulled up on Jesse, like, hey, like, she, first of all, she's like, I need to speak to you. And walked up on this man's property. And he was like, hey, get your ass up out of here. She's like, hey, no, I need to talk to you first. And then he proceeds to like grab her arm, but not, you know, like trying to mess her up, but just like kind of guide her away. She's like, don't touch me. And she was like, I'm pregnant. Don't touch me. Like, what? Like, no, get your ass. And Jesse is in the middle of moving a dead body from the RV. So that's why he's so paranoid. But the caucasity of Skylar to pull up on this man's property, tell him what and what not to do. And, you know, don't sell my husband marijuana. And, you know, this is not a good line of work for you. Like, I was like, the first time I saw that, my mind was blown. My blood pressure raised. I had nothing. I was just like, wow, this really happens?
No, it's TV. At least I hope it doesn't. I don't know if it happens or not.
Well, that type of woman exists.
Yes.
That is real. Unfortunately, it is a real person. And
jeez,
whatever. I didn't look up like the I don't know the actress name who plays Skylar, but she did a damn good job.
A great job.
I always say like the individuals who play these characters and make you hate them so much, they do an awesome job at acting. Because if you can hate a character and maybe even hate the person because of the character, they did their job. They did their job, and as we'll talk about in future episodes, like, Skylar really made me hate her. Like, seriously. Yeah. Season one, not so much, because I get why she feels the way she does, but in the future, nah.
I think they wrote her character to kind of, you know, show that. Like, because you're so, whatever Walt does, like, he doesn't do anything wrong by a viewer's standpoint. Mm-hmm. So you can never see it from a Walt Jr. or his wife or anybody else that's around Walt. You always kind of side with Walt. And that's one thing I do like about, you know, shows that kind of have a main protagonist, because no matter what, you always kind of side with Walt, like, yeah, even though he's completely wrong in certain situations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even being okay with the fact, and I'm speaking for myself, like, even being okay with the fact that he decided that he wants to cook meth, mm-hmm, to get money to pay his hospital bills and stuff. Like, mm-hmm, even when I forget what part of the season this was, maybe when they started selling to Tuco, but mm-hmm, I remember their first exchange and they got that big plastic bag full of money. He's just sitting here calculating, like, how much money he'll need and how long it'll take to get it. And he was saying something like, okay, I'll need this much for hospital bills, Walt Jr.'s college tuition, their daughter's college tuition, like, him running through those numbers to make sure his family is set after he's done selling drugs. Is what pulled me in to say, okay, I'm cool with him doing this, knowing that he'll never really get out. But it's like, I know what he wants to do with his money. So it's like, all right, I don't think I'm against it, even though it's wild. And they killed somebody in the first episode. Like, mm-hmm, crazy.
Yeah, you fail to realize it because it's not the most violent, you know, of deaths. But no, they killed two people within 3-4 episodes. Like, that's, you know, insane.
They did.
Yeah, like, they really did.
Like, seriously.
Like, they killed somebody the first episode.
The first episode, that one dude died. And, yeah, like,
was he actually dead? And the other dude just survived, and, you know,
it was weird because one of them died because of the gas that suffocated, mm-hmm, them in the RV. The other one, they had to, you know, take care of him in the basement. Mm-hmm. But both were, you know, killed within the first 3-4 episodes. Like,
crazy. Jumped off quick.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So that's one thing that I definitely got on the rewatch. And one thing I didn't notice the first time, this first season is only 7 episodes.
7 episodes, yep.
That's a bit weird, because one day I actually watched it in the day. I was like, damn, how did I finish this shit? But it's a good watch. I mean, once you kind of get into it and understand where the story is going, the rewatch is, like, you know, it's cool. It's like clockwork.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if we want to talk about Tuco, I thought that the introduction of Tuco was a dynamic, you know, introduction, because he stays around, you know, in a later season, which we'll get to once we get to that. The introduction to Tuco, like, is just crazy, because he's just this off the wall, kind of like a Tasmanian devil type character.
Thanks.
And, you know, he's so erratic. He actually uses the meth too, so. But that interaction between him and Jesse the first time, I was like, Jesse, you walked yourself into the lions then, my brother.
Man, what?
And politely got his ass whooped. Like, it was bad. Like, and that comes from being naive. Like, yeah, you thought the shit was going to be sweet. And what'd you say?
A few times, like, in this season.
Hold on, matter of fact, the first episode.
First episode. Cause, oh my god, right, because he tried to sell to Crazy 8 and, mm-hmm, his cousin or his brother, whoever,
got out of jail. That's the one that got arrested at the house, Emilio.
Mm-hmm. Right, so Crazy 8 was like, nah, this is pure, you about to take me to whoever cooked this, and they whooped his ass, and
yeah,
man, oh my god, that was bad. That got him bad too.
Jesse, yeah, has taken many ass whoopings.
Yes, he has.
Many ass weapons.
My God, Jesse's taking a lot of ass weapons. But hey, it's kind of like it came up, but that was a part of the game. And I think one thing that Walt has benefited from is a lack of ass weapons. Because if he had got as many ass weapons as Jesse, I think he would have quit. But, hey, you know, hey.
If he would have got the ass whooping Jesse got in that first episode, I don't know if he really would have survived. I'm just
Exactly.
I'm just saying.
Maybe Jesse saw the value in that ass whooping. He's like, I will take this hit because I know this fucking crystal meth.
Yes, yes.
I'm gonna take this L right now because I know that this
shit was A1.
Oh,
but the one from Tuco was so unnecessary. Like I kind of get where Tuco was coming from. If that sounds crazy, like I don't trust you. Like you could be the feds. Like, right, right. Like why would I, you know, do business with you? And then it comes back around, you know, Walt actually avenges Jesse's, you know, ass whooping, if I could say. I thought that was, you know, actually kind of brilliant, you know, the way that he went up there. Like, he really uses chemistry as a weapon. Yeah. And that's one thing you notice about Walt throughout, you know, at least this season, that, you know, he's not afraid to weaponize, you know, these things to kind of get what he wants.
Shoot. To like him thrusting himself into this type of life, like he has to, like, because mm-hmm. he ain't gonna be able to fight, so he has to use what he can to, in order to, you know, get what he wants. I'm trying not to say use what you got to get what you want, but seriously,
like I know this is what I know chemistry, and I know how to make some shit that can be dangerous through chemistry. Yes. I'm gonna use this shit.
Use it. Yeah. It's like a superpower.
Most of these motherfuckers don't know how to do it. So, like, whatever I create, they can't replicate it. So, like,
That's why I'm valuable. And that's one thing that can be, I guess you say, almost to a fault for Walt. Because he knows, like, hey, I'm that dude. And you need me more than I need you. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, Walt, you're just a chemist. At this point, you know, later on in the series, you know, he does develop a more of a, you know, a way of, you know, movement, maneuvering, and street savvy and stuff. But
I was going to say, so moving forward, let's, what are some of you guys' highs for this season? Like, what are some of your favorite moments of the season?
When he blew up that damn Tuco's office,
yes,
that's my favorite shit. And he walked out that bitch like
that was dope as shit. Like just the way it was shot, the walk away and everything, yeah.
And that, like, just even like that episode started off with him walking out of that building, and he was bald and everything. And that was the same episode that he cut all his hair off once he noticed that his hair was coming out from the chemo. So like that particular episode was so like. It was so transitional, I guess. It like really showed like he is hitting his like breaking point as far as like his life, his health, and his like, you know, this new lifestyle that he has to take on as a drug dealer or as a affiliate drug producer.
That's when he became Heisenberg. Like he became Heisenberg then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like that episode, and then like again when it started off with that scene and then ended, or like got to that point where him like walking out the building again with his money and like, fuck this, I got this shit. I loved it.
But another high, the fact that, you know, Walt was like unapologetically smart. Like, I don't think he really cared about, like, you know, he, no matter what, if I know what I'm talking about, I'm kind of like, you're not going to set me up. I'm the best. Like, and he talked to Tuco, which, you know, it's definitely white privilege. Like, I was like, I don't know where he got this from. But just to say, you know, I show up with less than what I promised you. You know, here's a half a pound, and you're going to pay me for it. And then I'm going to, like, I need the rest of that money because I'm going to bring you more next week. Matter of fact, I'm going to bring you 4 pounds. Like, but he already formulated how he was going to do that in the deal. And Jesse was like, what the fuck are you doing? But he... That's one thing I can appreciate about Walt. He's definitely forward thinking. Like I think he's like extremely brilliant. So
many times Walt should have got shot. He should have got shot.
That was
a point. He should have got shot.
I agree.
That's crazy. For me, the arc of holding Crazy 8 in the basement, like by the bicycle thing around his neck.
Yeah.
I think that arc was written so well because it's like Walt was morally fighting himself. It's like, okay, I'm holding this guy hostage here, but if I let him go, he's going to kill me, but it's inhumane to hold him here. So he starts taking him food and stuff like that. They start having conversations. They get to know each other. I think that arc itself was written really well. Even up to the point where Walt actually had to kill him, because Walt was actually about to let him go. But there was like a broken, he broke a plate or something, and Crazy 8 picked it up and was hiding it, because when Walt eventually was going to let him go, he was going to try to kill him with the broken plate. And Walt noticed that. So he had to kill him, or else Walt was going to die. So I think that entire arc was just written so well, because you see the moral dilemma that Walt had, even in just holding him down there and talking to him. Like, I thought that was dope as hell. It was just written really well.
No, that was a really good, actually, that was actually probably my second, because that, like you said, that whole, like, the relationship that they started to build with each other, realized, oh, this motherfucker's trying to kill me. Cool. So now I can kind of let go of my moral side.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yep. Vibe. So yeah, that was a great little segment. Yeah.
One other thing. I thought, so at the end of the pilot episode, I thought this was interesting symbolism. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you guys remember this, but when Walt was standing in the road waiting for what he thought was the police to come by, he tried to kill himself.
Yeah.
Gun jam.
Yeah.
But then he shot at the ground and the gun actually went off. And like, what if he actually would have killed himself? It's like, you're supposed to be, it seems like he's supposed to be here to do this. Or supposed to stay on Earth, at least for somewhat extended time. So I thought that was really interesting.
Okay. Well, Johnny, let me ask you. Did you have any lows for this season?
Not really. I think Mary, the sister.
Marie.
I think her arc was not necessary, honestly. Other than that, not really. Like, I think this season as a whole was really good. I wouldn't say it was spectacular, but there was nothing that made me say, no, this is just trash. Not really.
Mm-hmm. What you got,
Vicky? Well, Vicky got something.
I don't, honestly, because I don't know. Like I said, I felt that the first episode started off slow. Yeah, it had a dramatic beginning, but like the nature of like basically building up the storyline of like who is Walt White and like who is this like character, as far as like he's pretty timid and weak and blah blah blah, all that stuff. It was like, all right. So, but beyond that part of the season, like everything was like high, and you know, I would say, even though it was needed and kind of like helped to understand the like personality of Jesse, I didn't really get to know about his family. That was kind of like, I guess, if I had to pick a low, it's probably that part. Because I didn't really feel the need to know too much about his family and like, you know, the reason why he's such a idiot.
Well, I think my low, and it's not like a big thing, but I definitely think the season finale was kind of, it's all right. I felt like it was just the end of an episode, really, than just a season finale. You know, them having that final exchange with Tuco, they kind of really understand that Tuco's crazy as shit. Yeah. But that's it, right?
And he whooped the other dude there.
Yeah, he beat the dude that worked for him. Yeah. I was just like, that's it? But, I mean, then again, it was 7 episodes, so I'm not sure what the show writers actually had planned, but then again, you can tell that they probably had bigger plans for further seasons. So it's kind of like, let's just cut this, you know, while we kind of got a chance. But then again, if I had to pick a low, I think that the season finale was just blah.
Okay. I'm
not mad at that.
Yeah. I don't agree, but I.
You got all night. You know how that go.
Right, facts. Let me ask y'all this. Oh, go ahead, Vicky. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think with a lot of seasons, like just series in general, a lot of those first seasons, they really use that last episode to set the tone of like the possibilities of what's coming up later. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or they're going to be able to do another season, basically.
Yeah.
Like, they had to end on a note where it was like, oh shit, now they're going to be dealing with this crazy ass motherfucker. Where do we go now? Like, in that. Kind of like, all right, so I of course I still haven't started season 2, and I tried watching it a while ago and I just couldn't finish it. But with that, like, I know that this is gonna, like, you know, hopefully carry over into the next season and then build upon the rest of the series until the end.
Oh, it definitely does.
Okay, well, thank you for that.
That's why, because I've watched season two. That's why I feel like y'all did it. Like, I mean, okay. That's where my, I guess that's where my POV comes from when I say that.
Okay, got you. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm interested to watch season two because I know I couldn't finish it. See, starting it off was slow for me, super slow, which is why I probably never finished it. So we're gonna see.
We gonna get to that. Yeah.
Real quick before we move on, did y'all notice that there is very little music in these episodes? Like, there's really not that much music. Like, you know how music transitions to different scenes and different monologues and stuff? There isn't much music in these episodes.
I never realized that.
When you watch season two, just try to pay attention to it. Cause I think it's so dope. Like, I'm so used to hearing music in the background when people are, you know, delivering their lines and stuff. I realized like it's really watching these episodes is like, it's really quiet. Why is it so quiet? But then I realized there's no music.
Well, maybe they don't want to use like excess sounds to distract you from the lines and what said throughout the entire scene, which is, you know, valid because, again, these shows like Breaking Bad especially is very well written.
Yeah,
want to focus on like what's being said and what like the value in each word and each. Mm-hmm. You know, line, it makes, you know, everything kind of wrap up together. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why.
And
any like sound is probably just white noise, like nature or whatever.
Yeah. And I agree with that. I think it's dope. It's just something that I noticed. Like, I don't recall watching any other show where that type of thing happened before. So I just thought it was dope.
Okay. One final question about Breaking Bad, and maybe we can kind of end it before we get to our critiques of Wire season one. Who would you say is your MVP of your most like valuable character of this season, if you had to pick one?
I'm going Walter White.
I was gonna say Walt Jr. I love Walt. he's just such a such a precious boy. It's like, and he's just doing teenage shit and just like trying to live a normal life despite his disability and all this other stuff. Like, I just want to protect that little boy. And I don't know what happens after that, but
he's like a precious asshole. Like, he's so precious, but he's an ass. He's an ass.
I love it.
I'll fight Walt Jr. if he was my son.
Man, what? Seriously, like, dude, you're just not gonna be talking reckless like that. Like, this shit crazy.
Spicy.
He's so reckless.
He's doing it in a way that's like the only time he's like done it in like a very like direct, like I'm mad way was like when his dad was, you know, not telling them about the lung cancer thing. And it's like, yeah, you can be upset. But other than that, he's just an asshole. Just like he's a sarcastic asshole. And I think that's why I appreciate him.
Yeah,
he's me.
I've been it.
I like this kid.
Right.
So I don't have to deal with it, but I like this kid.
And you know, it's so crazy. Like, even with my favorite character, and it's been somebody I've been critical of. It's Jesse. I actually enjoyed Jesse. I enjoyed the fact that he's putting way more into this drug empire than Walt ever is. Like, Walt's just cooking. Jesse uses his home, his RV, his body, like. It's like when you start thinking about it, like Jesse sacrifices a lot to be a part of this duo. So it's like maybe I'm starting to just kind of grasp up to Jesse's character, and then, you know, we'll see what happens throughout season two through five. But I enjoy Jesse.
That's cool because he didn't even ask for that. Like, Walt found him, and Walt was like, here, you work for, like, you gonna work with me now. Like, Jesse
asked for none of this.
I mean,
so I get that. That's dope. Okay. No, I'm still walking. I'm still rolling with Heisenberg, though.
Okay.
Right, that does it. Right, cool. Turn up. Nothing.
Well, let's get into The Wire season one. Premiered in 2002, which was, you know, eons ago now, right? But
damn, that's a long
time. That's 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. Yeah. Oh, man. I don't even know where to begin, but we'll kind of stay with the same theme as what we did for the last show. If you have any thoughts about, like, the pilot episode, if you remember, you know, what went on.
Go ahead, Vicky. Go ahead. You got it. Ladies first.
Again, very slow, extremely slow. And maybe it's me. Maybe I just don't have like the patience for, you know, some shows. Or,
like that story, like that's crazy. But
it was so slow. However, looking back at it, and like I haven't watched the entire series, but I've gotten at least to like halfway through season four. But it really sets the tone for the entire series. Like,
oh, yes.
Every character, like even like some of the names, like the first person who is killed is this kid called
Snot Boogie.
Oh, Snot Boogie. Yeah, Snot Boogie.
Snot Boogie gets killed. Snot Boogie's name is Omar. Omar, Isaiah something. And it's like these characters are like, to me, that symbolize like a kind of like foreshadowing of a character eventually later on down the line. So Omar comes up a couple of episodes later.
Yeah.
Comes, of course, my favorite fucking character. I fucking serious. I love Omar. I love Michael K. Williams. Like, I love that fucking man.
Yeah.
With that, like, this episode really puts the entire series together. It starts like from the jump, and you don't realize until you watch the entire series and you go back at it, and it's like, shit, they really put this show together, like from the beginning. It's amazing.
You know what's interesting? I agree with you, Vicky. The very first scene, so when old boy is talking about Snot Boogie getting killed to McNulty, right?
McNulty.
What I realized after watching the entire first season and going back to the pilot episode, watching that first scene, it kind of gives us the what's the word I'm looking for? It gives us the premise of the season, basically. It's like every organization, every team of people has a set hierarchy that they must follow. It doesn't matter if you're in a drug game, if you're a police officer, no matter what it is, you have to follow a certain hierarchy. And it's like, he's explaining, like, you know, Snot Boogie, every Friday, we'll shoot dice, he'll come shoot dice, he'll steal, we'll catch him, we'll beat him up, and then go on about our day. Like, same shit every week. They didn't have to kill him, because we know he's going to do the same thing. Why would they kill him? It's America. Like, we got to let him play.
Yeah.
So I feel like that sets the tone for the entire season, because it's so many main characters, it's crazy. But every main character has to follow a certain
code.
Code. That's what I'm looking for. Code, not hierarchy. Code, have to follow a certain code. Chain of command. You gotta follow that. And you see that in the drug game, and you see that in the police department. Everybody has to follow that shit. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you said that, because when you get like further into the pilot episode, I think it may be the next scene after that, you go to the court scene where D'Angelo's on a murder trial. And you get your introduction to Stringer Bell, you get your introduction to Stinkum, Wee Bay, and I think Savino was in there as well. So you get all these characters, and then you see how they flipped a witness in a murder trial that D'Angelo was clearly guilty of. But you see how things really work in West Baltimore. Like, there's no other way around it. And one thing I enjoyed, McNulty is in there. And his love interest, which I think is Stringer Bell, we'll get into, like, the Stringer, like, McNulty, like, dynamic in later seasons. But for right now, like, he really has a thing for Stringer Bell. And so, you know, him and Stringer have their, you know, their slight interaction. And once the witness flips, he was like, oh, you know, nice work. And then he walked out. But I found it, like, you know, funny, you know, that was going on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you said, Johnny, like, people have to, like, follow a code, right? So D'Angelo beats the murder trial, and he's in the car with Wee Bay. And what does he start doing?
Talking.
He's not living by the rules that are set. Mm-hmm. We never talk in the car. But what, he's so excited that this thing is happening, so he's so excited he just gets to yapping. And through that interaction, they let the viewers know what's going on, how things work on the street. Like, you don't talk in the car. That's a rule. Uh-huh. So we further, like, we start knowing that the rules for the drug dealers are probably way more strict than what the police officers abide by.
Right. That's true. That's true. So, man, that's... I guess I'm gonna get it straight to my high here. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned before, there are so many characters, and watching the first episode, at least for me, I didn't realize that pretty much every character that they showcased is going to have their own story arc. And there's so many characters. I could barely remember a lot of people's names, but it never felt cluttered. Like the season one never felt cluttered to me. You have at least 5 police officers that have their own main story, and you have at least 5 people in the drug game that have their own stories, and they all somehow intertwine, but it never seems like it's cluttered. Like everything seemed kind of clear, and I really enjoyed that about this season.
I think one scene that I really appreciated, especially looking back on it and seeing how it plays out in, of course, again, foreshadowing of like how the story plays and now like how the show plays out, was when D'Angelo was teaching Wallace and what's his name?
Bodie
how to play chess.
Mm-hmm.
And he was basically breaking down like, this is the drug game.
Yes.
And this is how we play, and this is why we play the roles that we play, and this is how you move based on your role in the game. And like, of course, it shows itself later on, you know, especially when they get closer and closer with Daniels and his crew get closer and closer to identify who exactly is John Barksdale. Yeah. And they start to like actually see this organization as that chessboard, as this game of like, here's the king, here's the queen, string of bell, here's the rook, and the, you know, here are the pawns and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. So they're like using the pawns while like surveying, you know, them, the like, you know, not the towers, but what are they at?
What, they're in the pit.
Yes. Pit. They're observing the pawns in the pit so they can get to the king eventually. And they're identifying everybody on the board so they can eventually, like, move the pieces out the way to get to who is Avon Barksdale.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, was, like, an epiphany for me. Like, oh, shit.
Yeah, it's real. And I'm glad you brought that up, Vicky, because, like, Bodie was, like, under the impression that the pawn can become king. Oh, no. He didn't understand who he was on the board. And that's one thing you'll understand about Bodie's character just watching the series at large. Mm-hmm. He has true aspirations to move up the ladder in the Barksdale organization, but he doesn't, you know, he's not one, like, they keep him at a soldier's, like, right here. Mm-hmm. The most you can probably be is Weebe. Like, that's it. they not letting you move up that ladder because he wants to be undoubtedly king. Like, he has aspirations of moving up that, you know, I was, you know, say corporate ladder, but you know, that you can see that because he challenges D'Angelo a lot. Mm-hmm. If you ever notice it, so he feels like, why is he running the pit? I should be running the pit. Like you can kind of tell in his actions.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't like Bodie.
I mean, I ain't said you gotta like the nigga, but
I was just saying. An interesting note about him, though. I was listening to Jemele Hill and Van Lathan's podcast where they break down the episodes of The Wire.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember which one of them said this, but Bodie, every time he like, well, so he spits a lot, and the way he spits depends on his mood. So like, sometimes he has like a really hard like, just shoot out spit. Sometimes it's like real lackadaisical. It depends on how he's feeling throughout the episode. I thought that was interesting. I don't know if that's like a symbolism or something, if that's something that he made up, that he brought to the character, or if that was written for the character or what, but I thought that was pretty interesting.
I think that's probably like a character dynamic where, like you said, it's like his, what's it called? Like not an Achilles tendon, but like, it's that kind of like tick, basically, where like you can tell like a person's mood based on like a certain thing, like
I got you.
Like a poker face thing, I guess, maybe.
Yeah.
as like, oh, this is how you feel today. Like, this is how you spit, so this is how you feel. Like, that we can tell like exactly where your mood is in a particular situation. Yeah. So that just maybe his like, yeah, I would call it a tick, but maybe that's his tick to say how I'm feeling today, and I ain't fucking.
Right,
thanks. But one thing that I guess we can talk about is like Minotti. I would argue that he's the main character of the show, mm-hmm. because if you watch the series, the series begins and ends with Minotti, no matter what. But he it's so many storylines in this show. Like, it's just you know it's so much more than Minotti. Yeah. But Minotti drives season one for sure.
Yo, facts.
Like. It's kind of hard to get around his influence, because in the first episode, him and Judge Phelan's, relationship is what gets, the bullshit going down downtown. Because if the judge starts kicking up stuff, then the deputy major, it trickles down. Like you said, chain of command, Johnny. It shows, because Minotti's running his mouth to a judge.
To a judge, yeah. You're not supposed to do that, yeah.
Yeah. But that's a prevalent theme throughout season one, Minotti challenging authority. Mm-hmm. Like, because he's on this, you would damn near say Minotti is selfish. he is, because of the way that he kind of, he wants to prove that I'm the smartest. I mm-hmm. want to do this. Minotti has a level of being arrogant and selfish, and it shows.
I think that you just hit the nail on the head. He is arrogant, and he may not be necessarily selfish, but he's definitely doing things out of like proving himself and like who he is and what he brings to this department. And it's like, dude, you have to learn again the code of conduct and how things work and why they work in that capacity. And even with that, like the code of conduct throughout this entire fucking series, and especially of course in season one, it just shows like how our criminal justice system works and how crime works and how we, how our criminal justice system actually benefits from certain things that they allow in our community. And we can get into that, of course, in season three. but with that, it really gives like the inner workings of, again, our like judicial system and like the police system and so on and so forth. And with that, it does it in such a well way in this show that you don't have hard feelings about it, I guess. You kind of like look at it and accept it for what it is. And then like you look back on it and you think like, hold on, this is really fucked up.
Man, what?
Hold on. Vicky, I'm so glad you said that, because one thing that you see in this show, and you probably don't even think too much about it, but it's happening right now, police brutality. They fuck.
What's his name? Black dude.
Hurt and Carver. They fuck everybody up.
They blinded a kid.
That was Press Belusky.
But he still was a part of that same system. Brutality. And then they were drunk, basically, because they was drinking beer before they went over to the tower.
Let's go down to the projects and get them. Like, who does
like
that?
Fam, what? Mm-hmm. And like you were saying, Vicky, like the lieutenant, they told the lieutenant what happened, but he concocted a story right there on the spot. No, this is what happened. Exactly. We gotta make sure we protect our own type of thing. Like that was like, when I saw that scene, that was wild to me. Like, fam, like, you just gonna allow this to happen? You gonna allow that to happen?
But again, the way that it was written was so fucking fluid that it didn't seem like it was off kilter. It seemed so fucking normal, and it was, unfortunately, and it is unfortunately.
Yeah, right.
Where it's that police code of conduct where like I'm not gonna throw my men, my fellow officer under the bus
or my case.
Exactly.
For a period of time, well, for specific periods of time throughout the season, it seemed as if McNulty was the only one trying to actually catch the bad guy, quote unquote, because every time he would go behind somebody's back to try to get a wiretap or like an affidavit for something, I don't know the lingo, somebody higher up got mad. And they always had somebody trying to bring them information back on McNulty. Like, they wanted to be one step ahead of him, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But one thing that you notice, like, even if you get into season three, they don't care about arrest. I mean, they don't care about who you arrest. They just care about the arrest.
The arrest, yeah.
They care about numbers. Like, higher-ups, that's all they care about. And even in season four, you see that, too.
One episode that I was watching just not too long ago, like that, where they talked about that. They talked about, like, they want the stats. And, like, it was because they were trying to basically pin, they were trying to, like, send something to the grand jury that was related to the Barksdale case, which would fuck
up. But it wasn't enough. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, you know, we're going to put it in there because we need the stats. And it's like, no, like, you're going to fuck up the entire purpose of this case, which is what, like, primarily it was McNulty and, oh my God, what's my girl's name?
Kima.
It was Kima and McNulty that were, like, really, like, adamantly going after something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah. Lester probably too, but Lester was kind of like, you know what, fuck yeah. But like, but they were like, here is how you do it, and if you really want to get this person, like, this is what you need to do. And mm-hmm. they're like, no, like, we just need the numbers. Here we go. Like, throw it to the grand jury and have fun with it, and, like, hopefully it sticks. And it probably wasn't. And it wasn't, actually, because they didn't have enough. So, yeah, again, it was all about the numbers. It was all about statistics for them. While with the team, not necessarily the whole team, but at least McNulty and Kima, whatever, they were trying to, like, get the person. They were trying to get the case.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Damn, that's so true.
Yeah, it's a lot of breathtaking scenes in this season. Two that stick out to me personally, like, if you're talking about, like, you know, deaths or tragic things that happen. You have Wallace, the death of Wallace.
Facts.
And then you have Kima getting shot when she was undercover. Mm-hmm. Which one tugged at your heartstrings a little more? Like, because those are both, like, powerful scenes.
I'm not going to pin two bad bitches again.
Man, that's a tough one, because I would, that's really tough, because I was kind of invested in Wallace. Like, I could see, from the beginning, I can tell, like, that life wasn't for him.
Yeah.
It wasn't for him. And then learning that he's doing that to have money for, I'm assuming, his siblings or whatever that he was taking care of.
Nah, them weren't his siblings. Them was just kids.
Just some random kids.
They were just random kids.
Okay. I was wondering about that too, Jeff.
Yeah.
Those are just random kids that worked for the Barksdale Corporation.
I'm talking about the little kids that he was taking care of.
Yeah, those are just random kids.
Really?
That worked for, wait, what?
Yeah. Like, little kids that be around the projects running to get stuff, like, they work for them. They needed a place to stay. They don't have parents. Like, they live in that boarding house with Wallace.
Oh, shit.
Damn. Okay.
Damn, that's fucked up. Oh.
Come on, Ralph.
Revelation. Goddamn.
But that makes a lot of sense. Like, he is, but even with that, it's like, he's taking care of these kids and, like, mm-hmm. make sure they go to school and do the mm-hmm. stuff that they have to do just to make sure that they don't get caught up in foster care, which then they would be able to do the work that they do for first.
Exactly. Exactly. Because, like, okay, now it's kind of getting to Wallace's dynamic, right? Because think about it like this. Remember when he was doing the homework with the kid on the bed, and he couldn't do the word problem, but he can do the count.
Mm-hmm.
That shows that he works for Avon, at least. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. If I fuck up on the count, that's my ass. I don't really care about this word problem. So it shows, like, where their mind at when they're that young. He's probably like 8.
Yeah.
Damn, Rev, just taught your boy some shit. That's crazy. Well, okay, so
I know we really can't answer the Wallace Kima stuff, but I just wanted to throw that out there.
I was leaning toward Wallace, but now I'm leaning toward Kima now. Like, something about, he is taking care of these kids. He is taking care of the kids.
Yes.
But, like, I was kind of invested in Kima's story. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, she had a girlfriend. She was going to school. She was really about her police work. She was, like, one of the only people really on her job, like, really care for her job. So I appreciated mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And going on that undercover sting or whatever, not knowing what could happen, and then just getting shot. Like, I didn't anticipate her getting shot. I really didn't. So when it happened, I was like, shit. I kind of I kind of saw Wallace getting shot. Like, I knew it was going to happen. I remember texting you about it, Ralph. Like, yeah. I think Wallace going to get shot.
As like, fucked up as it may sound, like, I think Wallace, he should have stayed in the Eastern Shore. He should have never came back.
100%.
So, I, like, the first time I watched it, I felt bad. The second time, I was just like, should have stayed up there, bro. Like, I mean, like, but, like, I think the Kima thing hurts so much more. And it's not to say that, you know, Wallace's life doesn't matter. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that I'm invested in Kima's story arc a little more
because
of everything that she had going and showing that she was really genuinely, you know, trying to do everything. Yeah. And one thing that Minotti took hard was the fact that Kima got shot, because he put everything together to try to get this sting operation going. And by him being a white police officer in West Baltimore, there's no way that he can go undercover. Kima goes undercover, and now she's fighting for her life. Yeah. So that's why he took it so hard. And and your man's Rawls got this. Not Rawls. Is it Rawls? Yeah, that's Rawls. The white major.
Oh, yeah. The one that was giving him all the shit the whole season.
Well, he deserved it.
But did
Minotti deserved every beratement that Walls gave him.
I don't know, man. He was just trying to do his job. That was blocking him from doing his job.
Rob was trying to set him up for the okie doke. He's basically saying, like, you need to do these things the way that I'm telling you to do them. Mm-hmm. Like, you
which was some bullshit.
So we're excusing the first time he talked to Judge Phelan or the second time? Like, every time he talked to Judge Phelan, it was like a bad thing. Didn't
Judge Phelan call him into his office? He just didn't go to him like, here, I got this information.
Johnny, I can tell you haven't watched past season one, because you wouldn't give Minotti any slack, because he does this season two.
I haven't.
Every time Rawls got in his ass, he deserved it. It was sometimes where, okay, yeah, he was using policemen to, you know, spy on Minotti. Yeah, I went with that. But in the moment of Kima getting shot, he said, hey, look, this is not on you. Everything's not about you. And trust me, if it was, I would have been the first person to tell you. Yeah. So, you're all right.
I think my thing is, I don't like Ross because
The
racist as police officer.
100%. 100%.
Oh, 100%.
Racist bullshit to keep people down, basically. Like, and he does it through his own officers, i.e. McNulty. So, like, I always saw his actions as a way of preventing McNulty from doing the work that McNulty knows he needs to be doing to, like, you know, again, catch the bad guy or do whatever the hell he's, like, intentionally trying to do. Yeah. Even though McNulty definitely is a habitual line stepper, he is going to do what he wants to get the job done. But the fact is, like, Ross was also a racist-ass prick. And he was terrible.
Yes.
Like, again, shit to intentionally prevent this man from doing the work that he felt was the proper work to be doing as a police officer. So, fuck Rawls. McNulty was still shitty, but wasn't perfect.
I don't ride for Rawls in that. And that is his. But if he didn't McNulty ass, I was like, all right, Rawls, you got it.
This guy, habitual line stepper, is hilarious. I just want to throw that out there.
He is. Like, Johnny, once you get invested into further seasons, you see McNulty just.
Even like, yeah, he
did. It's like, my God, like, but you see when Minotti has his eyes set on something, he doesn't see or hear anything else.
Tunnel vision, yeah.
Yeah, and it does cause division amongst the officers, amongst, like, it really is a problem.
Nutty. Oh my God.
let's
talk about Bubbles.
Right. Yeah, we got to talk about our King Bubbles, man. Like, Bubbles is probably one of the more central characters, you know, especially on the street side. I think the turning point for this season was when, you know, Johnny got jumped by, you know, trying to burn those boys down in the pit. Mm-hmm. Because that took a toll on Bubbles. Yeah. Bubbles was like, I think he was at a point where it was starting to take a toll on him just being out in the streets the way that he was. And by them doing that to his friend, he was like, well, you know what, Kima, you know, let's, you know, I'll be your snitch. Like, what's up?
It's even going back to my point earlier, even the side characters have their own story arc. We see him go to I'm just gonna call them AA meetings. I don't know what they call his
Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah, Narcotics Anonymous. We see him go there. We see that he has a daughter that he wants to try to start seeing again as he gets clean. Like, even the side characters.
That's
his sister. It's a sister. Oh shit. Okay. Yeah, well, still see his niece. See his niece and sister. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, his niece and sister.
We still see a story arc for these side characters, but it's still, you know, it's not overbearing where it takes away from the other main characters. Like, this season was just written so well. I just have to go back to that because it was.
Every character is, you know, it's just a spider web of like connections. Where,
right?
Yeah.
Connected no matter what they're doing. So like whether it's Bubbles or Kima or Avon, whoever, like everybody is connected. And even they later on in the series, like the way that they add on characters and how they connect with these other characters, it's perfect.
Yeah. It's really a web, like Vicky said, it's a web. One thing I enjoy about, you know, definitely about the show, like, it's well written. And one thing I've noticed, like, just in research, and it's not like, you know, big secret news, but, you know, this is inspired by real life. So if you have these characters that are inspired by real life characters, and then the experiences of the writers who were working for the Baltimore Sun and that were police, it definitely adds a layer of writing to the show, because this is real life. This happens. So, you know, that's what adds to the realism of the show, because it is realistic.
Thanks.
You know.
Man, this is great. Go ahead.
No, I forgot. I didn't even tell y'all which one I prefer. And I prefer. That's fucked up. Kima Wallace death or like shooting.
Yeah.
I'm still not painting two bad bitches, but both of them were very hard to digest.
Yes.
Very, like, it pulled on your heartstrings.
Yeah, dude.
I just really feel that they, and of course this goes later on into the series, like anybody who is trying to do better for themselves eventually gets killed.
Oh yeah.
It's kind of like a Game of Thrones effect where it's like, I really like this fucking character, and then it's gone.
Oh, yeah, snatch. Gone. Yeah. That's
some HBO shit.
And that's one thing I appreciate about the show, because it snatched, like, okay, I'm like, I'm investing to this Wallace kid. He can do a lot. Maybe he goes away and does something else. No. Oh no.
That's what I was hoping.
No.
It was like, okay. I don't know how, but he found a way to go to his grandma's house out in the country. Like, all you have to do is stay there.
He was getting ready to snitch. That's why he had to get
out.
That's what it was. Like, Daniels took him out. Like, he was, like, first of all, Wallace started using, and then he started to disassociate himself from Coop and Brody because of, you know, them killing, you know, Omar's boyfriend. So it's like, that. Well, can we talk about Omar? Because that was interesting. Like, I enjoy that they put Omar in this story. What, for one, he is the wire. I don't think you can really, like, get around that. Because once you get into later seasons, which you'll see, Johnny, Omar is an essential character.
That's interesting.
Because I'll save those nuggets for later. Just with Omar being a homosexual character and not being, he's been unapologetic with it, and he lives in this world of, you would say, toxic masculinity, and yet he's still himself. I think that's I applaud the writers for even doing that. That's an O2. You know, that's easy to do today. Mm-hmm. You know, but putting that on, you know, on screen for us to digest back in 2002, you know, you'd probably get some blowback for that, I would imagine.
Yeah. You would. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would piggyback off of that and say, yes, like, Omar as a black male, criminal background, gay man, openly gay man.
Yeah. Not shy about it at all.
At all.
At all. And it's like, but that is amazing to see, because it's like, to me, it shows, like, you know, how homophobia works and how people are only gonna be very homophobic towards those that they know that they feel that they can, like, fight or, like, you know, defend themselves against, quote unquote. Yeah. Omar wasn't that motherfucker.
No,
at all.
When they saw him in the street, they ran the other way.
Yo, Omar coming.
Yeah, facts.
Like, we are fucking out. So the fact that, like, again, this, you know, unfortunately, he had to be the fucking, like, gun-toting, you know, kind of Western-esque, you know, for him to have to, like, be able to live the life that he lived. But the fact that these motherfuckers were scared shitless of him everywhere he went, like, that was amazing to me. And unfortunately, like, it's like, that was unfortunately how he had to move through life. Like, so I love Omar.
Yeah, Omar's dope. And one thing that doesn't age well, like, the F-bomb being dropped. Well, anytime they refer to Omar,
I definitely cringed.
I was like, I'm not gonna lie. I was just like, damn, they was letting that joint fly.
Like,
and then you always
sign of the times, like that. Yeah.
Right.
Outside of the fashion, that definitely was a sign of the times, right?
Yo, the fashion,
the fashion trash.
Angelo is like trying to pick out his clothes for the day.
It was so trash.
My God, my dude, swear to God, he was fresh.
The heavy stars joints with the Chris shirt, the fat form joint. Like, everybody had a Nietzsche fat form.
But I'm about to say, but I'm not gonna front. Like, that wasn't me too at one point. I know it was trash, but hey, like, looking back on it, it's like, damn.
I ain't gonna lie. The one scene that's the most famous GIF probably on Twitter right now is the Weebay, you know, like that, you know, doing that. And that scene, Stringer Bell had on like a powder blue Sean John joint. Crispy. It was crispy.
I probably had that.
I ain't mad at it because I probably had something like that.
That's what I'm saying. That shit crazy. Definitely crispy. A period piece. That shit crazy.
Facts. Now, I think we can stay here a little bit longer, but let's kind of like start getting into like these specialty awards. I would say, like, what would you say is kind of like, I don't know. Do you want to say your favorite character right now? Like, or least favorite character? I'll say least. It's a lot of them.
It's like, so many characters. Oh my God. Yeah. I guess if you guys have multiple, you can get multiple. Mm-hmm. My least favorite character. What's the cat name that killed Wallace? What's his name?
Pooh. That motherfucker.
I dislike him with a passion.
Yeah, I don't like Pooh.
He's just too, like,
he's stupid.
Man. Yeah,
Pooh really is dumb.
He's dumb and disloyal. Because that was his homeboy.
That was his man. No.
That's not who I'm talking about.
You're talking about Brody?
The light skin. Yeah.
You're talking about Brody.
Brody.
Okay. But fuck Pooh.
No.
Pooh big trash, though.
Fuck Pooh for killing Wallace 100%.
Yes.
No, but Brody, that's his name, Brody?
Mm-hmm.
He's just too aggressive for no reason. Like Ralph was saying, like, he's the pawn that's trying to be the king. Like, fam, you really got to relax. Why are you so assertive and aggressive to these people that's just trying to show you the ropes? Like, you don't know shit. You don't know nothing.
It's kind of like the overzealous guy at work. He wants to show and prove to the bosses. Man. Because when you notice, like, Brody always gets played by Stringer. If you ever look at interactions of him,
yeah.
So
crazy. That's my least favorite.
But I got a curveball for y'all. Like, with my least favorite. My least favorite is Brianna Barksdale, and that's D'Angelo's mom.
Yeah.
Like his mom, who happens to be Avon's sister. Mm-hmm. Now she runs. She cooks the books. She keeps the money. Like, she running this thing. But she wants D'Angelo to be so invested in the family business when that's not him. Even though we started the season with him being on beating a murder, you know, beef. But throughout this season, you see D'Angelo struggle with his humanity. Mm-hmm. He really doesn't know, like, this ain't really for me. Like, I'm really struggling with this because there's no way you get a Stone Cold killer in the room. He starts writing a letter to a deceased person. Like, you know. That doesn't happen, but D'Angelo is slowly realizing that this is not the life for him.
Yeah,
and a family name is really smothering him, and his mom helps in that. So I can't rock with Brianna because of that.
I agree.
Nah, I fuck with that pick. I fuck with that.
I agree with that. It's still a fuck poo for me.
She can't be mad at that.
And it was just, again, one of those moments where it was like, dude, like, y'all were, like, thick as thieves. Like, y'all were cool as shit. And because of what somebody else put in your head, you felt the need to, you know, kill your homeboy. And it just pissed me off. And again, it was, again, also one of those things where it's like Wallace wanted better for himself. He wanted to do that shit. And you decided, you know, as his friend, that you would cut that shit short.
Yeah.
So fuck you, dude. Fuck you. And yeah, Brianna was fucked up for that shit too. She really pissed me off. She really pissed me off later on in the series.
The introduction of her when she brought old boy some food. Mm-hmm. Like I was confused. I was like, so she know he sell drugs? Like she cool with that? Like I was so confused. But then realizing that
she wanted
him to be in on it. Like, yo, this is nuts. Like this mm-hmm. is crazy.
I mean, she got D'Angelo to take the 20 years at the end of the season. He yeah. was getting ready to flip. Like, he was going to tell everything.
Yeah.
But in order to keep the family business alive, she talked him into a bit. She talked him into that.
We ain't going to go down that road yet. But another person who actually got on my nerves mm-hmm. just enough was D'Angelo's baby mama.
Oh, yeah, Dinette, bitch trash, like Dinette.
She was also to me one of those people like Brianna, where she was trying to get him to live this lifestyle that he wasn't really, mm-hmm. that wasn't him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't force this man to like doing that.
Facts.
Do the things that you want him to do based on the fact that he's doing this particular line of work. Like, let shit go, my girl. And her and Brianna and Pooh.
Well, let's get into our favorite characters. Now, who we rocking with for favorite? I got two.
Well, at least you know who my top favorite is. And that's Omar.
Oh, yeah.
Omar is my favorite, period.
Yeah.
Y'all gonna kill me
for Omar. You
said y'all gonna kill me for one of mine. I'm gonna go last.
I feel like there was a lot of like admirable traits about a lot of the characters.
Oh, yeah.
But like, as far as like picking one, I'm just like overall like loving. I don't know. I'm just gonna have to just stick to just only.
I'll give one for the sake of time because you know we can go down this road all day. But I think for me personally, I enjoy Lester Freeman. Like, I feel like Lester Freeman.
Okay, add him to the list.
I'm about to say, that's the cat that was on pawn shop duty, right?
Yeah. Yes, like,
he's also one of mine.
Old school cat. Like, he steals the scene. And one thing I really enjoy about him, he surveyed everything before he started becoming arguably the best detective on the show.
100%. 100%.
So, like, he found Avon. And then the night Kima got shot, he rallied the troops to kind of get everybody back to, you know, on the wire and get everybody working. He got Przybylowski out his shell. Like, I think Freeman is really the glue. And then not to mention the way he swooped in on Chardin.
Man, listen.
He saw that young thing walking through there. He's like, hey, I'll get you coffee. Don't worry about it. How you take your coffee? I was like, my nigga.
old school player. Shit, that's how they do.
Yeah. But no, he definitely was like the rock into that wire case. Just how everything flowed, it really worked through him.
That's a good one.
Right. So, Lester, Omar, Kima, three favorite characters. My fourth favorite character, McNulty.
Okay.
He's my favorite character for this season. Like, my man was really just trying to get his job done. Every turn they was trying to block my guy. Like, they was trying to block him. Like, fam, let this man do what the fuck he trying to do. Fuck your numbers.
Oh, yeah. Add Ross to my list of people I don't hate. I mean, I don't like.
I can say that. I appreciate that big. But, yeah, man. Like, Go ahead.
I was gonna say it's crazy. Like, our discussion goes to show you how deep season one actually is, because we didn't even talk about Avon.
Oh, it's a lot that we really didn't
get. Yeah, like it's that just shows you how deep like the storylines are and the characters are in this season. Like, season one was amazing. It was amazing.
I
Yeah. Now let's get into our versus discussion now. Let's take the gloves off. Like, what are we doing now? Like, now let's ask. I'll just start off with this. Do you think that if these shows stopped after season one, they would stand alone?
Yes to The Wire, no to Breaking Bad.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I actually agree with that.
I'm not saying I disagree. I just wasn't expecting that from you, Jimmy.
Like, season one of The Wire could really be its own miniseries. Like, that could be it, and it would be great. Like, it would be great.
Yeah.
Valid.
All right.
With Breaking Bad, it's like you only see the beginning of Walter White becoming a drug dealer. Like, you don't see enough of his story. Like, I need to know what else happened.
Yeah, to be satisfied.
Well, I think that's due to the fact that the people who wrote The Wire, they intentionally had, like, each season was thematic. So, like, everything had a beginning and an end, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was set to a certain tone about a certain subject, and that after that season, you may not hear about these particular subjects later on. So they wanted to, like, you know, make it an opening and closing, even if, you know, they decided to do another season or not.
Yeah.
So, like, I think the writing for The Wire allowed it to, like, for each season to stand alone in their own, you know, kind of, like, whether again theme or like if it was like a mini series, basically it could sit on its own.
So
I agree with that.
But kind of like piggybacking off what Vicky just said, like another thing too, they didn't know if they were going to get a season two of The Wire, so that probably helps a lot. And I guess I stand alone argument, because if I don't know I'm getting a season two, let's try to figure out this thing, you know, right here. And then if we get a season two, which they found out while they were shooting season one, you know.
Gotcha.
And I guess Breaking Bad already knew we got at least two.
Yeah.
You know, we got at least two. But, hey, I definitely think it stands alone. I echo Johnny's sentiments on that. So.
Yeah. They were both great seasons.
They both were. Like,
100%. And the fact that Breaking Bad was only 7 episodes and it was a great first season, like, says a lot about that. So that's dope as hell.
Yeah. But I don't know. Like, I don't know if you can say age well when it comes to these arguments. Like, would you say that any of this content aged gracefully? Because, you know, we're looking at this in 2020 vision. Aha. But, you know, just I'm glad you like my pun there. But, you know, just but just, you know, seeing that, you know, at least one series started in 2002 and the other started in 2008. Just looking at these seasons now. Do you think, like, oh, wow, that's dated? Like, is that, you know?
With The Wire, I don't – oh, go ahead, Vicky. Were you about to say something?
Oh, yeah, Johnny. I'll say something after you finish.
I think for obvious reasons, The Wire, the technology, clearly that didn't age well. Like, technology, fashion. Mm-hmm. But as far as, like, detective work and, like, police brutality and – the corruption in the police department, even the drug game. Yeah. All of that. Same shit. Yeah. 18 years later.
Yeah.
So besides that, I think the technology and shit that didn't really age really well, but for Breaking Bad, I don't really think there is anything that stopped it from aging well. I think it's okay. Like I watch it right now and it's like, it doesn't seem dated to me.
Mm. They have technology flaws in Breaking Bad too.
But it's not as obvious as Wire though.
That The Wire started 6 years before.
Well, right. True. Yeah. True. Yeah. No, right.
I'm just saying, like, to poke holes in your argument, because there are technology flaws. Like, they're looking stuff up on the computer and it's like one website. Like, it's just stuff like that. Like, it's no, I'm saying.
What I mean, you... no, I get it. I get it. But they was using typewriters in The Wire, though.
Yeah.
They was just talking about, damn, we were supposed to get the computer set up. Typing on a typewriter.
Underfunded. Like, underfunded police officers. Police station.
Right. Watching Kimo white out the fucking the paper on the typewriter. Like, come on, fam. I don't even remember the last time I used white out. Like, just in general.
I mean, yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Well, as far as like the aesthetic of the show, I would say that, yeah, it didn't age well because, again, technology and how things have changed, you know, in our society from that point to now. Now, with both shows, like, let me start with The Wire. The Wire, I think it aged well in its story, in the way that, like you mentioned, like the way that the our society functions through the lens of law enforcement and the judicial system, and even the drug deal end of that, and how that all plays out. I think that part aged very well because it is still real to this day. It is still accurate to this day. But the fact is that The Wire was built on a reality. It was built, it was created based on true stories of like these types of dealings, from, like you said, the writers from the Boston Sun to the police department and so on and so forth. And even like people who are like the drug dealers, or like, I forgot the man who Omar's character was based off of, but that was a real person.
Yeah.
So based off of real people to an extent. Breaking Bad was more the surreal part. It's like, how many 50-year-old white men
right
says, I'm gonna
cook. I'm cooking meth today. Like, okay.
That, like, that's, that is a very surreal
fantasy. Like, that's
of like a drug, you know, dealer or whatever. So like it aged well as far as like the show being good, but like it was never a realistic show in reality.
Caricature.
It was very much a caricature of like white people and drug dealing.
I like that. And just to kind of, you know, piggyback on both of you guys' points, like, I like everything that you guys said. Like, the technology in The Wire is very, very dated. Like, you know, cell phones become a thing in like further seasons. So it's just like, you know, starting with The Wire, I just think that, you know, like everything, like the thematic presentation of The Wire is just a lot that you can really unpack and just really enjoy by it being a good show and just going over to The Wire. I mean, Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad had, you know, some good points, you know, only in 7 episodes, which is actually very remarkable because, you know, 7 episodes, that's a miniseries. Like, that's not a season, but, you know, just it utilizes its time in a great, you know, and the, you know, to his advantage, because you have an hour to kind of get into this life of Walter White and how he dives into the drug game, for better or for worse. But yeah, like we said, this is really a sci-fi Western type of fantasy, because I can't believe that, even though I'm thoroughly entertained, but this shit ain't happening. Like, you know, I believe he'll snap and kill his family before he, you know, becomes a king. Like, but you know, we're talking about TV. I'm trying not to get too far off subject with that, but no, I think that these shows are great for what they presented, you know, especially in these first seasons. Well, it's time to vote. It's a three-way, it's three people on this line. Now, I'll start with our esteemed guest, Vicky, and see where she goes for season one.
Why do I gotta go first?
Ladies first. Johnny, go first.
If you don't want to go first, Vicky.
Let me, it's up to you.
Okay, so in the case of Breaking Bad season one versus The Wire season one, insert drum roll here, I'm going with The Wire season one over Breaking Bad.
I am actually shocked.
I shocked my damn self.
I'm shocked.
I shocked myself. Granted, these are both of these season ones are really good, or great, honestly. Mm-hmm. But for me, it comes down to the fact that The Wire was able to have so many story arcs, and it didn't even seem like it was doing too much, and everything flowed so well. Like, that's amazing to me. Like, The way it was written was just great. Not saying Breaking Bad wasn't written well, but The Wire, like, it's just so much more in The Wire. Mm-hmm. So I gotta go with The Wire season one.
I'm mad at that. Keep going.
Right. I'll gladly go out there and say I definitely got The Wire season one. And I think because, like, every time I watch it, I do grasp something new. Because, like, on rewatches, like you guys didn't kind of see that, you know, Wallace wasn't related to those kids that he was living with. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe on a rewatch you'll catch that they're employees of Barksdale too. They just have to go to school, like, because they're so young, or, you know, whatever. But I enjoy it because every time I watch it, I do grasp something new. I think Breaking Bad, even though I've rewatched it, I think I've rewatched it, well, at least the season twice in totality. I kind of grasped most things on the first watch. It was an easier watch on the second time because, you know, it's just like I understand the story fully. So, you know, just getting those concepts wasn't that much. But I enjoy season one of The Wire more.
Nice.
Okay. Yes, that leaves me. I'm going to, of course, go with The Wire season one. And it's basically kind of what Johnny said, like the fact that there are so many details that you like miss the first go around and you watch again and you're like, oh shit, this is also what happened. And, you know, you kind of start to connect the dots. And even like I said, with the first episode, like the details in just the opening scene were so significant to the entire series, not to just that like moment or to that episode or to that season, but the series. Yep. That was crazy. Yeah, it was perfect. So I'm gonna go with The Wire season one.
Wow. Oh wow.
With a clean sweep, we have The Wire season one.
Yeah, clean sweep. Everybody picked The Wire season one. Surprising. I don't know.
I'm not gonna front. I did not expect The Wire season one to be this good. I'm not gonna lie to you. Mm-hmm. I thought I was gonna watch it and be like, oh, that was cool. That was all right. Mm-hmm. No, this shit is amazing. Like, this shit is great. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
We'll get into our thoughts about the, you know, season two and their own, because it gets a little rocky. I'm talking about for both series, too. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to seem like I'm coming off just pro one or the other. But I think if people would follow me on Twitter, they understood where I was coming from. Like, they understood my bias. I changed my bias. But it's a lot that we didn't even get into for some of these series. So I hope that our listeners forgive us. And maybe if you go watch, you know, some of this show and debate it with us, we'll, you know, love to have that chat with you.
Yeah, talk to us. Y'all know we like to talk, especially Ralph. He love to debate on the timeline. But I'll get on the timeline and debate this if y'all want to. So
I actually do. But yeah, we have to give our guest Vicky the time to kind of plug what she's got going on. Any social media handles you want to drop there for the people, Vicky?
I ain't doing shit.
That's not even true, because you done DJ like four times in the last 2 months.
I have, but
on IG.
I don't think I have anything coming up though.
No. I'm just making sure.
Well, actually, every Wednesday into Thursday night, I DJ at twitch.tv/parlordenmusic. And that's the regular weekly thing that I do. It's usually 1 to 3. Hopefully, we're going to change that because that's a late night and I don't want to do it.
Oh, that's 1 a.m.
1 a.m. to 3 a.m.
Oh,
all right.
Every Wednesday into Thursday night, morning. No, they're chess. But anyway. You can follow me on Twitter at Black Girl Lost, straightforward, no underscores or nothing. You can follow me on Instagram at Cleo Jones. You can follow me, or you can like DJ page on Facebook, Makeda Kravitz, or you can follow Black Cinema Club on Facebook, Black Cinema Club STL, blah blah blah. Like, yeah. I do a lot. I'm sorry.
Listen, talk your shit. I love it.
Yeah, this is your time.
No, just follow me. This is the Yam Book Club. All of that. I do a lot. Just follow me. Just follow Cleo Jones. She'll tell you everything.
There you go. There you go.
That's what's up. But now, Vicky, we want to say thank you for coming on and chopping it up with us. You know, we appreciate your expertise and your opinion. You know.
she will be back for part two.
Yes,
and three, four, and five.
Right. Part two will be in your ears next month. Let us kind of go back and digest and get a game plan together so we can present these facts, you know, and our opinions to y'all. But if you made it this far, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe this episode. If you're on Apple Podcasts, we appreciate a 5-star rating review if you can. If you're on YouTube, make sure you like, share, and hit the notification bell so you don't miss anything from Oversaturated Podcast.
Facts. And with that, that's episode 79.
79.
Breaking the Wire Part 1. Mm-hmm. Vicky, thank you again. And we out.
Yep.
Peace.